This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You are listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9 with your presenters tonight, Sonia and Albert. We've been getting a couple of SMSs and messages in. Thank you very much. We got one, an SMS from Grant in Melbourne, who says that he'd like to see the old Commodore 64 game Battle Chess made into a movie, which we agree. We think that could be quite interesting. And also, we got an email from David saying, Solitaire the movie based on a true story, starring Steven Seagal as the dealer. Can out hero manage to hunt down 52 pieces of a puzzle in order when the clock is ticking, and if he messes up the order, he'll have to start again. Co-starring Andrew O'Keefe as the dealer's trusty sidekick, No Deal. Thank you very much, David. Unfortunately, that last track did also skip, but that was Ladytron with Turn It On. Is that right, Sonia?
That's right. Yes. Turn It On.
Yeah.
And when do you think that was produced?
Oh, God. You always try to stump me. I never have the answer. Do you know?
2002.
Okay, we'll go
it
the
20. It sounds like futuristic, but the past as well.
Yes, it's a palindrome, 2002. Yeah.
So it is.
Yes. So that kind of leads us into your review of some kind of Tron-related activity?
Yes. Oh, I almost forgot.
Yeah.
No, I didn't actually. Having you on. Yeah, Tron, a review. Year of release in 1982. Director Steven Lisberger. Producer Donald Kushner. Company Walt Disney Pictures. Starring Jeff Bridges before Starman.
Uh-huh.
Bruce Boxleitner. Cindy Morgan. Barnard Hughes. And the wonderful David Warner, who incidentally plays three characters or roles in this film: Sark, the programmer inside the computer game, and Dillinger, the corporate villain, and the voice of the master controller, or MCP. I mean, you do think, when you look at this again, this is daggy, this is very old, but
no,
wait for it. It still is got its moments.
Yes.
It's 92 minutes long, and it's not too bad, really, considering.
It's an appropriate time.
The music is actually by Wendy Carlos, and she did the Clockwork Orange soundtrack back in the 1970s. So I have played that, I think, a few episodes earlier for the show. The distributor was Buena Vista, and it was filmed in Disney Pure Digital as far as the copy that I looked at, which was the 2002 20th anniversary copy.
Oh.
Yeah. And this was the movie that pretty much broke the mold for graphics of an electronic nature in films, even though technically it only had 15 to 20 minutes of actual computer graphics in the final production. It actually was the first film of its kind that explored the use of computers in the making of a film. For purely entertainment value only. And it wasn't brain surgery, not as far as the plot or storyline goes, but it did change or help change the whole landscape, I think, of graphic computer simulation, as they used to call it back then.
Mm-hmm.
Now they call it CGI.
Yeah, they get
back
lazy.
Then it was graphic computer simulation. They could have gone GCS, but
it's a little bit harder.
I don't know, they just weren't into the acronyms back then, I guess. It was less than 30 years ago, if you think about it, when computers in the movie business first began to make images. Tron was just the sort of movie that Disney Studios at the time was looking for, because they definitely, desperately wanted to cash in on the video arcade cyclone phenomenon, actually.
Yeah.
I found out later there was actually a video game Crash.
Crash?
In 1983, I believe.
Oh.
Financial Crash of video. There was too many video games out there, too many arcades.
Oh, okay.
Every dairy or milk bar had a video arcade game, outside or inside.
Oversupply.
Too many, you know, and they were running out of yen in Japan, so it was pretty serious. So Disney cashed in on it, and this phenomenon was sweeping the world at the time, especially in the United States. We also have to be aware that this movie also by itself altered the playing field of computer simulation and design. Quite a feat for a bunch of guys who made it who were in no way at all, to start out with, computer lit or savvy.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know anything about computers. They were actually artists. They were animators. Artists first, animators second. The computer stuff was actually outsourced to four different computer tech companies, all American except for one, and that was a painting lab in Taiwan because they couldn't get people to basically dye the cell images. So they went to Taiwan, where it was cheaper, cheap labour. So it was a very revolutionary film in many ways. It was the idea of Steven Lisberger, who was also the director, a completely original idea of his own, in fact, which is unusual these days. Normally a director makes a film from a game that's already being completed or written for and produced, but he did it himself.
All his own imagination.
And he could see a future happening where computer games would dominate a lot of what we think of as entertainment. So the idea of Tron was an artistic vehicle to basically show off the talents of many of his artist friends and colleagues, originally most of whom were illustration and background artists who worked on films from Star Wars to The Black Hole, which was another Disney film earlier. How does it go story-wise? The first scene is so 80s, but it's an 80s, I guess, that's what it is. The viewer is taken inside a video game arcade. It's perfect. It's shiny. It's day glow. They've got the neon lights, the electronics, noisy sounding machines fill up everything. And we're following the camera to an upstairs room where a man played by 80s leading man Jeff Bridges, who's on a computer, of course, and it's very ancient.
It's a giant box. Fills the whole room.
It's not that big. No. It looks like a PC.
Yeah, normal
but
size.
But it's not.
It's got like 4 pixels and it's green and black.
It's green and black. That's it. And what he's doing is he's hacking into a mainframe, because they don't have sites. Mm-hmm. They have mainframes.
Yes.
And he's trying to basically download some information about his own invention, which was a computer game, a video game called Space Paranoids.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like something else. Anyway, space, invaders, I guess. So he's trying to come across some proof, evidence that mm-hmm. he actually invented that game.
Yeah.
Because, of course, the company that he made the game with have taken his ideas.
Oh, yes.
Intellectual property,
et cetera.
That never
happens,
does it?
No.
Okay. But his programmer, because he's a user, mm-hmm. capital U, his programmer is portrayed as a person inside the computer.
Yes.
And it just happens to look like and is Jeff Bridges' character, which is called Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the name of that character, the program, is called Clue, which I find out later is an old fashioned program term. I've never heard of it before. I actually thought it meant hasn't got a clue, but it's apparently it's got something to do with old programmer terms.
Oh, okay.
Which I still don't quite understand. He's captured by Sark, who's played by the English actor David Warner, and he's tortured and he becomes de-resoluted.
Uh-huh.
So
is that like
he's terminated.
Oh, yeah. Okay, terminated.
No more, resolution.
No more. He's not chopped up into little pieces.
No, he just fades off into
nothingness.
Tiny little pixel mm-hmm. type of things.
Like in Willy Wonka.
By MCP, who's mm-hmm. the Master Controller Programmer.
Oh,
so they do have an acronym in there.
Yes.
Meanwhile, back in the real world, Flynn, who's Jeff Bridges in the real world, is pretty peeved that another program of his has disappeared or crashed. And we learn that he wants to get, like I said, wants to get his hands on evidence that he designed this video game. So he actually hooks up with some friends that still work at this company called NCOM, the computer program company. Sounds like obviously something else. And we see one of the characters who's virtually the spitting image of a young 80s version of Mr. Bill Gates. He even has the glasses, and that's played by Bruce Boxleitner, another 80s miniseries leading man. His character's called Alan Bradley, and he's pretty upset as well because he's got a security program called Tron.
Mm-hmm.
And Tron is a security program, a democratic security program.
Very political.
That makes sure that MCP doesn't get too powerful too controlling, you see. So there's the rub.
Checks and balances. Mm.
So Dillinger, who's the bad guy, played by David Warner, decides that he has to get rid of Flynn.
Mm.
And they've broken into the laboratory.
Yeah.
Or computer program laboratory where all these games are made,
mm-hmm.
and he turns him into a floating pixel.
Okay.
Basically teleports him, and so he's put into the game.
He's digitized.
He's digitized, yeah. It's quite a cool scene, actually.
Mm.
for its time.
Yes.
You know, it's not quite The Fly, but it's not quite Star Trek either, you know.
Yeah.
There is a female character, very 80s, and she's sort of just an appendage to the two main leads. They both sort of tussle over her.
Uh-huh.
They both want her, but they're geeky, so they're not getting very far. No. And, of course, they have almost like an avatar creation of their own, which looks just like them in the unreal world, the cyber world of the mainframe. So they do their best to try and get, you know, try and get this evidence, which, of course, they do.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, they have to fight against tanks.
Yes.
Strange three-dimensional graphic tanks.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the wonderful light cycle.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Scene, which I'm sure Speed Racer owes a lot to.
Yes.
Technically.
With all their straight lines. But Speed Racer goes around a little
bit more. Speed Racer. I haven't actually seen it. No, I'm sure Speed Racer does a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, it's has probably about 25 years on it, possibly.
So Tron does win the day. Flynn returns to the real world. Doesn't win the lady, unfortunately. Alan, or Bill Gates, gets her.
Mm-hmm.
And MCP has a meltdown. Sark is destroyed. And MCP in the real world is suddenly strangely quiet and can't get its hands on those Pentagon mainframes, which of course it wants to do.
Yes.
It's very 80s, very Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
That's Tron, the groundbreaking movie of 1982, where it delivered on its mission to overwhelm the eyes. And for viewers who in that age were still novices in the computerizing world and its advancements, still many to come, of course. But in this movie, it was really just a vehicle, I think, for the new technologies that were developing. And you could say Tron was the avatar of its day.
Oh, yeah.
End of line.
It's a breakthrough. But although it wasn't released in 3D, as far as I know.
No, but the new one.
The new one?
Tron Legacy.
Yes.
Is supposedly going to be in 3D.
That's coming.
Also Disney Pictures, December 2010.
This year. Yeah. Mm. Oh.
Just in time for Christmas.
Oh, yes.
All the merchandise, of course.
Yeah, we'll be 3D'd out, I'm sure, by that time.
Mm.
You've been listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9 with Sonia and Albert. That was a little bit of a review of the ancient classic Tron, and we've been talking about games and their impact on science fiction, horror, even they have a lot of fantasy in games nowadays too. And we have a message from someone, do we, Sonia? Can you?
Yes, I don't quite understand it, but I'll try.
Yeah.
For games, it's like Hollywood in the 20s, just before the Hays Code dampened it all down. Ah, right, so we're looking at the censorship issues, yeah.
Mm.
He was a very interesting, uptight little man, Mr. Hays.
Oh, yeah.
You ever seen images of him?
No, I don't.
Doesn't look happy.
That was from Robert from Northfield. Thank you, Lord. Thank you so much for the message. We're going to be right back after a couple of messages. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9 with Sonia and Albert. That music bed track that we just played was titled Promise Reprise, which was from the Silent Hill 2 soundtrack. The Silent Hill video game franchise has been made into the 2006 film, which includes elements from the first three video games. And in total so far, there have been 7 Silent Hill games spanning from 1999 to...
Aren't some of them banned?
2009.
Which ones are banned?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. Yeah, it's quite a deep and dark horror franchise. And when I watched the movie, it was quite scary, but regardless...
Oh, it has drilling of body parts.
Yeah.
It's been modified. Konami has since modified the game to meet the MA-15 guidelines. But it was banned originally.
The first one, the game.
Homecoming.
So if you ever seen the movie, you can probably, and you wanted to see how dark and disturbing it can get, try playing one of the video games and turn all the lights off, play by yourself, and you might wear yourself a little bit.
It's pretty sad playing by yourself.
No, those kind of games, they're probably the best kind of games to play by yourself because you don't have anyone laughing in the background or telling you what to do. You just get lost completely in these games and you get scared by, you know, stupid sounds or yells or screams. It's quite hard. If you're not a gamer, it's quite hard to really get into it. But it's, of course, you know, like we said before, it's a growing industry. So
And speaking of growing,
yes,
I've got some questions that are growing here.
That are growing, yeah.
I need to ask you.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I
guess tonight I'm the resident gamer. Yes. Sonia's learning all the history of games, and I'm trying to give the gamer's perspective.
I have been in the history of games.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Remember my Pong? I did pretty well at Pong.
Yes.
Yeah. Gallagher. Okay, let's go. If you could choose only one, what gameplay do you prefer, action or role-playing?
Oh, that one. Yeah, I've looked through these lists of questions, and that was probably one of the harder ones. When you kind of
You've got
have
10 seconds.
10 seconds. Okay.
It.
I'll choose role-playing just because you get a lot more storyline and you get more involved in the game, and you get for me, I get a lot more enjoyment.
Your favorite example of role-playing
games? I can't go past any of the Final Fantasy games. There's so many of them. You know, I think I started out with Final Fantasy III, but the best of, you know, all of them so far is Final Fantasy VII, even though it goes up all the way up to 13 now, I think. Final Fantasy VII was kind of a breakthrough, and the story was great.
So we've got that down here, your favourite action and role-playing game, and you've marked that one. I can tick that one off. All right. Favourite or most memorable game of all time?
All time.
Well, I should say up to now.
Up to now, of course, yeah. So, I mean, Final Fantasy VII was a great one. One I probably really enjoyed was Diablo 2.
Diablo.
That's also kind of like a role-playing game, not so much turn-based like all the Final Fantasy games, but you're going around, it's kind of like Dungeons and Dragons, you're going around dungeons. Diablo is the kind of, it's called that because of the demons and the hell theme running throughout, and you
better
for
than
Diablo
the first
2.
One.
Yeah, better than the first one. You're going down these levels into the depths of hell, and you meet Satan at the
Seven
bottom.
Seven levels of hell, like Dante's Inferno.
Mm,
a little bit like that.
Yeah.
Lots of fun.
Yes.
It's cold down there.
Yeah.
Arcade or LAN games?
This is quite a, I guess, a contentious topic because when you're a student and you have no money to survive on, you find cheap ways to entertain yourself, and you either go to an arcade and you slot your coins into the machine, or you go to a LAN where they've got a whole set network of computers and you pay like $3.50 an hour to play a game on a computer. So I chose LAN.
Hours not long enough, though.
Yeah, not certainly not long enough, but yeah, I mean, you could spend 3-4 hours and not...
Instead of studying.
I mean, a movie costs $15-18 now, and you get an hour and a half worth of it. So LAN,
unless it's Avatar.
Yes. So LAN for me.
Any video game crushes? What do you mean?
Oh well.
And what do I mean?
I probably don't haven't played as many video games recently, so there hasn't been any recent ones. But if you're an avid gamer and you play anything that's ever been released, there's a lot of characters that you kind of get attached to, and yeah, you can fall in love with certain characters.
That's disturbing.
It is quite disturbing, but
disturbing.
It's the same way that you could fall
treatment.
For same way you could fall for an actor or an actress in a movie,
but they're real.
They play a character. The actor themselves is real, but the character they play, obviously they put it on. So you know, if there's a character that has a particular storyline throughout a game, or is voiced by someone that sounds...
Is that quite common, that people have obsessional...
They can have obsessions with games.
Emotional attachment to such...
You can...
You can have
crushes,
characters?
And you don't even have to... It doesn't even have to be a crush. There was in Final Fantasy VII, you can get quite attached to a character that you play for so long, and I think a third
I've
of the way...
Yeah.
Third of the way into the game, she dies, and you can't ever play her again. So that's quite tragic. And obviously, that character, if you've ever played Final Fantasy VII, was Aeris.
Right.
So, yes.
And have you ever played Dungeons and Dragons or MUD?
MUD, mud. MUD is mud. So I have
what
played
is mud?
Mud. Mud is a multi-user dungeon. That was kind of the step up from Dungeons & Dragons, where instead of playing it in your friend's basement around beanbags and coffee tables, you go on the computer and you it's a text-based game where you tell your character to do certain things like walk north or...
It's a bit like alternate reality
So, and you explore these dungeons and you meet these monsters and And it's all kind of based around Dungeons & Dragons, so there's the dice-based system.
I remember that craze.
Mm.
That was bits disturbing.
Yes, it was.
People just disappeared. multiplayer or single player?
Multiplayer, just for the fact it's a lot more fun playing with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than just by yourself, you get to interact and learn from other people and kind of share your accomplishments.
Mm. And for the current generation of gaming platforms, PC, Xbox, PlayStation or Wii?
I play probably most of my games off PC. I don't actually own an Xbox or a PlayStation, but I do have access to a Wii, so I do play that as well sometimes.
What do you think about Wii? I mean, what do you think it's got going for it?
It's a great platform. Of course, it doesn't have the same technological aspects as Xbox or PlayStation, but of course that's not what's the selling point. The selling point, of course, is the controller and the games that they've got, the family based entertainment.
More, yeah. Games. Family orientated, entertainment.
Mm. Yeah, rather than.
And the first most memorable gaming experience, what would that be?
There was quite a few games that I played all the way back when PCs were the 286, the 486, but they were all quite simple. So I think it was on a 486 I played Commander Keen, which was a great platform game and very enjoyable.
What was it about?
You're a spaceman or kind of a space cadet and you're...
Space cadet, I can relate to that.
You're exploring.
So obviously
this.
You've got a different...
Yeah, I probably do.
Idea of what that is.
You're exploring this new unexplored planet, I guess, but there's a lot of platforms and you explore the whole world by a pogo stick, which is quite interesting. So you're jumping up these high out of reach
places.
Have
you ever been on a pogo stick?
No, I haven't. So I live my life through video games.
Yes, and have crushes on things that don't exist.
Yes. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9 with Sonia and Albert. That song that we just played was by Roxette. It's called Almost Unreal. Which
I met Roxette.
You did? Yeah. Yes. Which was from
certain drinks, actually.
Oh, okay. Mm. So they you
drank.
They drank.
Vodka.
Didn't slip them anything.
Absolute vodka.
Okay.
Of course.
Yes. That was from the Super Mario Brothers soundtrack from 1993, which, interesting bit of trivia about that. So the song's inclusion on the Super Mario Brothers soundtrack angered the writer Per Gessle, as it was originally written for the Bette Midler film Hocus Pocus, but was never used. So... there you go.
Maybe it would have made the difference.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Hocus Pocus, I don't know. You don't know.
It was
a good
kind of at beaches.
Beaches. It's a good witches movie of its time.
Beaches?
No, Hocus Pocus. And we've got some movie and TV news and a little bit of video game news too.
Yeah, a bit of this, a bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, according to MTV, Samuel L. Jackson and Josh Duhamel are in early pre-production on Sympathy for the Devil, a supernatural movie in which Duhamel and Jackson play humans caught in a battle between heaven and hell. He has to say it, I've had it with these...
bleeping.
Demons in my...
bleeping.
Town. This sounds a little bit like Legion, which stars Paul Bettany as a buff archangel. Set for release later this year.
IGN.com has spoken to president of Marvel Studios, Kevin Feige, who's pretty much verified the core lineup for the Avengers set for release in 2012. The team will include Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Hulk, and Nick Fury. Fangirls and boys rejoice!
Look out for Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, coming to a cinema near you. The film was a hit at this year's Sundance Festival. Tucker and Dale vs. Evil is already being compared to Shaun of the Dead. Variety reports that the film amusingly reverses horror convention in which nubile urban youths are menaced by rural inbreds. This time, the hicks are innocent parties, fending off hysteria-prone college kids. Must be schoolies week.
Mm-hmm.
Eager to believe the worst about rural life, the film stars the talented Alan Tudyk of Whedon alumnus, who was in Firefly and Dollhouse and promises to be fun, even if it's not all that groundbreaking.
And farewell to Zelda Rubinstein. The short-statured actress played the psychic hired to rid a home of demonic forces in Poltergeist. Rubinstein died on Wednesday in Los Angeles. She was 76.
And in TV news in the UK, Gay Times have put the stars of Being Human on their latest issue cover, which was just hit newsstands recently. The cover shot is the three stars together, Russell Tovey, Leonora Critchlow and Aidan Turner, sprawled together on a bed, looking a little rumpled but very saucy. The three are featured in the issue as part of a Gay Times special on the hottest television shows of 2010. Russell Tovey has also appeared in Doctor Who and Leonora Critchlow in the acclaimed Sugar Rush. And that's from www.sfx.uk. Co. UK.
Patrick Stewart will be in town this weekend for Oztrek 2. Tickets are pretty much sold out for this event, but I'm sure some people will be just happy breathing the same air as the legendary Star Trek captain and, of course, head of Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters. Besides the opportunity to speak to Picard himself, the event will also host a Karnoff, giving fans the chance to perform their best Shatner impressions. If you've missed tickets to this, keep an eye out for Oztrek 3, set to hit Melbourne in August, with special guests Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis.
The BBC has commissioned an investigation into how GLBTIQ people are portrayed on TV, radio and online. Licence fee payers will be asked what they think of on-screen talent, humour, language, tone and stereotyping relating to the portrayal of gay, lesbian and bisexual people. The BBC said it was vital for the corporation to reflect the diverse communities across the UK. It is understood the BBC will also approach people who hold homophobic opinions. A report summarising the findings will be published in summer of 2010, and the BBC plans to share its research across the broadcasting industry.
And in gaming news, expect the buzz and debate around Apple's new iPad to continue for some time. EA brought their cred to launch the iPad's potential to the gamers of the world. First reviews are mixed, with many just calling it a giant iPhone, or technically probably the iPod Touch. Positive, though, are the sharp graphics and swishing or tapping gestures to execute moves. Seems like it still has a way to go to prove itself to serious gamers, though.
It's going to be horrific on the trains in a few weeks.
Oh, I know. A few weeks. I think it's coming out March. Yeah. March is when the Wi-Fi-enabled iPad is coming out. But then I think a month or two later is the 3G-enabled one. So, it will be out there and it will be big.
Yep, it will be. More gaming news. Kotaku.com.au report that Capcom are set to release a film based on Dead Rising. The film is to be directed by Keiji Inafune, who produced the game, and it will follow the exploits of brothers Shin and Juji, who must escape from a quarantine town that's filled with zombies. According to Capcom, the movie aims to give viewers the experience of a first-person shooter, which didn't go over brilliantly in the Doom film.
No, that was a bit of a bomb.
Should have called Boom Bomb. Capcom have not announced whether viewers will be charged to see the film, and it's expected to be released online later this year.
And according to CVG.com, the BBC is moving closer to producing a proper Doctor Who video game in the near future. Rumours have been abounded ever since the show's triumphant 2005 return, but nothing has ever really surfaced. The possibilities for a game based on the show are almost limitless. You could choose to play as different incarnations of the Doc, choose your companion from any series, fight villains from Daleks to Sontarans and Slitheen. Bring it on! You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam with Sonia and Albert on Joy 94.9. That track that we just played before was Elevation, the Tomb Raider mix by U2, which was on the soundtrack for the 2001 film Lara Croft Tomb Raider, which was released as a single and differs a little bit from the album version.
Okay. Homophobia in games and things associated with it. That's the topic we're going to look at now, Albert.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, it's
a touchy subject.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah.
But it's definitely something that's, from what research I've done, it's very predominant within the game culture. And even beyond that, because I was doing some look-see and I've actually even seen the episode South Park called Guitar Quero, which is based on guitar
Hero.
Obviously, Hero.
Yes.
And it was episode 113 or number 116, depends how you look at it, from Comedy Central's South Park, which aired back in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the title was parodying the video game Guitar Hero. And Stan and Kyle are obsessed with the video game Guitar Hero, but apparently it's Guitar Quero.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah. That's how they pitch it.
That's how it was portrayed at the mm-hmm. end. I don't know. It is amusing, but what do you think about...
Oh, yeah.
I know South Park takes on everything.
Yes, and they've had a lot of criticism about the content of their shows. And when you do watch it, it is pretty funny a lot of the time.
A lot of the time.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty light-hearted, I suppose, aspect to what is homophobic.
Yeah.
A more sort of serious one starts to get a bit more uglier, I guess, would be, for example, Metal Queer Solid or Snake Eater, which came out in 2008, and that was on YouTube, released on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's an animation parody of the game called Game Metal Gear Solid 3,
mm-hmm.
Snake Eater, if that means anything to anybody here or listening.
Yes, so Solid Snake was a character in the game.
And it was made for a contest collaboration hosted by Newgrounds.com. And it says, as a warning, this video game is not intended for comedic purposes and should not, offend anyone. But it shows a figure, a male figure, coming up behind another male figure dressed in army sort of gear.
Yes.
And
jumping on him
and raping him.
Yeah.
So
the rape isn't in the game, but in the actual game, but there's a lot of sneaking up on random people.
Okay. You've seen that? Oh,
yeah. I've certainly seen parts of the Solid Snake game, Metal Gear Solid. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And recently there was an online game warning against Gay and Lesbian Guild, and that was a couple of years ago. A longtime virtual gamer, a woman called Sarah Andrews, didn't realise she would cause such a ruckus when she began recruiting new members of her World of Warcraft virtual gaming guild, which caters apparently mostly to gay, lesbian and bisexual and transgender players. In recruitment messages she posted on WoW, she wrote that the guild was not GLBT only, but we are GLBT friendly. And that got it into quite a bit of a bother legally. And it's still an ongoing legal issue, according to the site that I was looking at. There are things like that. Blizzard Public Relations, who created that site, they're actually trying to avoid the whole contention and saying that they're coming after this person in particular, charging her with sexual harassment online.
Yeah.
Because she's apparently recruiting people to become lesbians.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
Recruiting.
This whole online sexuality stuff is quite
straight
out
people
there.
So
I mean, even
swayed.
Her attorney, Jason Schultz, says it's very unfortunate that Blizzard, this company, has chosen to punish the very people who are discriminated against under their supposed harassment policy that they've brought out.
Yeah.
And he further says, queer folk have always been told to hide themselves and who they really are in the real world. I would hope, he says, that in these new online worlds, people wouldn't be punished for being honest about themselves. And I'm just looking online as well. A lot of people and users who use these games and these virtual reality worlds, they are getting more fearful of saying what their, sexual identity is online because they feel that they could be punished and, homophobic harassment that can happen when other people come on.
Yeah, it's
to play. It's so
quite a confusing topic because the online media that you've got now at the moment is such a good resource for GLBTI people. And they most of the time you can feel completely comfortable with yourself and express who you really are, but it's different in the gaming world because when you try to be yourself, the anonymity of online content and games also means that you can be very bigoted and narrow-minded and attack or bully these people that are trying to be themselves, basically.
Yeah, and want to play games and set up their own virtual worlds.
Yeah.
And they should be allowed to do that in their own landscapes
yeah.
to be able to feel free and able to do that. Mm. Where can some of these sort of slurs and some of this harassment end up?
Yeah.
That's the issue.
Yeah.
Does it end up in the real world?
Yeah. I mean,
copycats, the people, violence, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, the people that are attacking these people online are just as cowardly as the real souls in real life. So I don't really think that unless that person is a violent person, they would actually go to such lengths.
Yeah. But it does reinforce certain stereotypes.
Oh, of course.
You were telling me about one game called earlier. Was it War Effect or...
Mass Effect.
Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Where has they, tendencies for that. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. I think especially probably Halo and where you're just running around shooting things and a lot of the interaction with other players is not just shooting the players but also speaking to them through microphones and headsets. So
what sort of things?
What sort of things are being said? Oh,
what sort of things do you think would be considered homophobic?
Oh, well, if someone... I think I've read an article about someone that it was kind of like an experiment. I'm not actually sure if they were gay, but they used the word gay in their handle online. And as soon as they changed it, the attacks just started flooding in. And there was also some articles about how when they changed their name to gay or homo on their nickname, it attracts attention from the game companies themselves, and they say they are not allowed to use sexually explicit content in their names because, yeah, these people are trying to be themselves, and that's offensive to, obviously, these straight game corporations.
Well, so, they're worried about money.
Money, yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of people in the community that play games.
Yes, yeah.
You do, I mean.
Yes, and...
I don't.
Yeah, there's organisational kind of association called Gay Gamer or online, which at least is trying to bring together these.
And there's Riot Gamer, which is more of a feminist online organisation that I discovered recently. Yeah. And their mission is to resist. They're feminist and pro-queer, anti-racist and gamers. And their mission is to is best defined by what it is not. So they're not considered the average gaming website, apparently.
Mm.
Yeah, very interesting. They have some interesting articles on there, and you can look them up. They're on our Facebook as well. There's a link there if people want to look into that, because they're specifically a more recent article was about "Watch out behind you, Hunter! Homophobia is alive and well," and that was an article about video games and basically, yeah, the sneaking up behind. Male rape on male sort of thing,
yeah,
particularly military,
yes,
type of scenarios, which is interesting considering the policies in the US at the moment.
Yeah, they probably should,
whether people should come out or not,
have more kind of Navy related games.
So it's an interesting site, that one, and I think it's something that maybe even here needs to be addressed.
Yeah, it's something they've got kind of organizations. You're talking about the anti-violence, trying to do something about that, not in just games but in also
well, they report violence as it happens with their key members who are out there with their laptops, and they're going to have a system soon where they'll be able to use iPhones as well to report back incidences as they happen, and some of them are homophobic incidences, or at least they want to do further research to find out and identify if that's what they are.
Yeah.
In fact, so yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think games, young impressionable minds? I mean, we looked at the whole censorship thing earlier. What do you think of the link between, say, images of homophobia, the storylines in these games? Do you think they do affect?
Yeah, I mean, gamers, when you have certain games that have enough balls, for lack of a better word, to put queer content in their games, it says a lot about where we are today and how we consume our media. Games aren't just for boys now. They're not just for straight boys that are in their little clicky groups that talk down to the GLBTI community. When you've got games like Mass Effect and Dragon Age that have content showing, I guess it is in some ways sexual content, where they have male characters forming relationships or encounters with other male characters. It means that even though you have this homophobia in the gaming world, you can at least play and enjoy games and be comfortable with yourself if you kind of relate to certain aspects of these kind of open-minded games. So,
like Sims Queer, the Sims game.
Sims, there's a Sims Queer. I haven't actually heard about that.
There is, apparently.
Yeah.
So, the same, you can do the same sort of things that you do with the other Sims, except it's, you know,
same sex.
That's it.
Yeah.
And apparently it's a very popular for different households that they have. And you can invite Sam over and give him a hug or a back rub.
Yeah.
A dance. Yeah. Mm. You know?
Some people might say it's redefining the traditional definition of opposite sex couples. But yeah, it's something that is happening right now, of course.
Mm.
So
people are online right now playing these games.
Yeah.
And there are the pros and cons. There's the really positive ones and the not so positive.
Yeah.
So I guess it's up to our future, the censorship laws and how that's going to be handled.
Yeah, that will be interesting development.
I think so.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9 with your presenters Sonia and Albert. We've been talking about games and how they're affecting the science fiction and horror landscape. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9 with Sonia and Albert. And that last track, if you weren't listening, with the repeated word fatality, was Fatality by Loaded, which is from the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, which featured a lot of the "come here" from, I think it was Scorpion, who used to shoot out the spear to try to drag his enemy towards him.
Goodness.
Yes. Oh. It was a fun game and probably not so fun movie though.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. All right,
yeah. Apparently they're making a new one this year, I think.
Number 4 wouldn't it be?
Number 3,
Scorpio,
I think.
Scorpio King and
So this is Mortal Kombat, not...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not The Mummy. No, Scorpion King was from The Mummy.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, there you go.
And Mortal Kombat titled Devastation, I think, is in the works for this year.
And so you've been listening to Albert and Sonia on Sci-Fi and Squeam, and we've been looking at games. Game On, we had Helen Stuckey from the wonderful Acme down at Fed Square with the IGF, or Independent Game Festival, 2009, talking to us a bit earlier, and that was pretty inspiring and very interesting. We also had a review of that, which I went on about a bit. And I also looked at Tron as an archival film about the technologies from computers to movies, etc. We also looked at
we had
censorship.
A bit of censorship and how there's no R rating classification in Australia for video games. And a bit of our news, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did a bit of that. We did a bit of the history of games, some old school games, and we looked at homophobia and queer culture within games and those effects. Next week, we will be talking to Jules Wilkinson, who's an author, and she likes things zombie, and that will be in our Undead special for next Thursday night on Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Starting at 11 o'clock.
Yep. So tune in.
Yes.
Go to Facebook.
Yeah, you can search for Sci-Fi and Squeam and become a fan on our Facebook page. That's how you can get in contact with us during the week. Thank you for listening tonight.
Sci-Fi and Squeam was synthesized and squashed into shape by Sonia, Albert and Kaz. For more information, visit our Facebook page, Sci-Fi and Squeam, or check out joy.org.au.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.